It's time to head into the barn. This is the Bet America Radio Network. You're in the barn. In the barn. Talking horse racing news, events, and a whole lot more. Here's your host, Jason Beam.
All right. And a good Thursday morning, y'all. Welcome into the Bet America Radio Network as you are in the barn. A very pleasant Thursday to everybody. Hope your racing week got off to a good start. Big Gulfstream Park yesterday. The big million-dollar Rainbow Six just about went down. There was about six or seven horses that it was live to in the final race to pay out the, I think it was just over $1 million in the Rainbow Six jackpot. But the 12 horse got, who was one of the horses that had multiple tickets to it, just burst right out to the front and blew everybody away. And it ended up paying still $60,000 for the 20-cent bet. Actually, there was a guy I follow on Twitter who had it, so I don't know him very well, so I don't want to bring up his name or, you know, maybe he's trying to keep it quiet. But nonetheless, a big hit for that particular gentleman, so congratulations to him. But a pretty slow start. Wednesdays used to kind of be, you know, really the start of the thoroughbred racing week. You know, Southern California, New York, they all used to race on Wednesdays, and now it's kind of gone the way of, you know, there's just a handful of tracks like Tampa and Gulfstream right now that are running on it, Turf Paradise, of course, and, you know, some of the smaller tracks. But it was kind of a busy day news-wise, and there's a couple stories I want to talk about. I do want to tease our guests coming up a little bit later on the show. Kevin Schnoor is going to join us, and Kevin is a student at the University of Arizona in the Racetrack Industry Program. He's also the simulcast host at Rialto Park, and so he's pretty active on Twitter. He's a funny guy, and he's a young kid who's trying to make his way into the sport, and I thought it'd be fun to have talk to, you know, one of our young racing fans and ambassadors who's trying to make the sport great and make his career in the sport of racing. So Kevin going to join us a little later. We're going to have our bad beat of the week, and it was a bad one, man. Oh, this was a rough one. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but a couple stories I want to talk about first, and the first one kind of hits a little bit close to home for me. Northlands Park in Alberta in Edmonton. I'm sure a lot of U.S. players probably don't follow it. They might take a look at it on Canadian Derby Day, their $200,000 Grade 3 event. But they had a big news conference today, and here's some of the audio from the CEO, Tim Reed, of Northlands.
It's with mixed emotions today that we talk about our partnership with horse racing. What we do know, in coordination with horse racing, is 2016 will be our last year in the horse racing business.
So basically, he was announcing the demise of Northlands Park, a track that has decades upon decades of history up there. And part of the reason it hits close for home for me is because I actually worked with Northlands for the last few years, probably from 2011 till about 2013 or 14, doing a lot of their web stories and content, basically just doing a lot of writing stuff for them and helping them out their website. So a gentleman who works there was actually my first general manager at Portland Meadows, Champagne Duane. And he's nicknamed that because if you think about Portland, one of the things Portland is famous for, and then Champagne Room, you'll put it together. Anyways, Champagne Duane, he was the GM at Portland Meadows when I started practicing announcing it. So I would go down. I remember the summer of 05, I heard Vic Stauffer's Amazing Call of Cesario, and I was like, I want to be an announcer. This is so cool. So I bought binoculars. I spent most of that summer at Emerald just sitting up in the grandstand, you know, calling, just kind of whispering under my breath, you know, on the outside, here comes so-and-so, you know, because I didn't want to, you know, disturb any of the folks next to me. But when Portland started that winter, or that fall, I started going down to the to Portland Meadows more regularly. I actually owned my first horse down there in like 03, a horse named Global Arena, who I'll tell that story real quick. A friend of mine, a guy named Tristan Root, was in my fraternity, and Tristan's brother was a trainer, Ben Root. He was kind of always a top three or four guy at Portland Meadows. And I contacted Ben. I said, hey, I want to own a racehorse. And he goes, well, hey, as a matter of fact, we're claiming one Monday. Come on down. You know, I told him, I said, I probably want just 10% or so. So I drive down and The horse was in for $3,200, so I was like, okay, I'm going to claim 10%, so $320 check I'll bring. So Global Arena, it was a maiden race, and he was coming up from Gulfstream. He had actually run like fourth for maiden 62,000 on the turf or something, and somehow ended up at Portland Meadows for maiden 3,200. And so I said, all right, well, let's see how he does. So he parks. He wins easy. And I go back to so Ben claims him. I go back there to the barn, and I said, Ben, I think I want to go in for 20%. He goes, oh, okay. So he never hit the board again, and we ended up selling him for, I think, $1,100 to a guy named George Davis, who ran him on the fairs for a long time. And the best was George's owner coming up and saying, like, oh, yeah, George sold to me for $1,500. And we went back to him, and we're like, George, I thought you were buying it for your owner for $1,100. He's like, hey, I got to make some money. I'll never forget that. But anyways, total digression. So I started coming down to Portland Meadows to practice announcing, and Dwayne, who was the GM there, was just really cool about letting me go up on the roof and practice, and he actually was the one who said, let me call my first race, and then when the guy was sick, he asked me to fill in, and ended up getting a job at River, and then when Mike O'Brien, who was the announcer at Portland, left, Dwayne offered me the full-time job there. So I always have a warm place in my heart for Dwayne, because he's who hired me at Portland Meadows. And he's a native Canadian, and so he went back to Canada after he was a stint at Maryland. And I've been at Northlands for the last many years, and he asked me to help out with some of their website stuff. And so I had a great relationship with them. And their whole team up there, I kind of worked with Jason Teague at the racing office, Matty J when he went up there, Matt Jukic, who's the announcer and assistant racing secretary, Scott's last name, but he's the marketing director, and Chris Roberts, who was the GM at the time. And so I did a lot of work with those guys, and so I'm really bummed to hear that they're cutting out horse racing. I mean, when I listen to that audio and I watch the audio, the guy looks like he's just feigning sadness. Like, it's just with very mixed emotions. And yeah, his emotion, I don't think his emotions are that mixed. I think he's fine to be getting rid of racing. But, that means that this season at Northlands, it'll either kind of be, they'll go out with a bang their final season, or they'll kind of whimper out. I remember with Hollywood Park, talking to Vic Stauffer, the announcer there, before their final meet, and he goes, I think people are really going to treat this as a celebration. And when I talked to him afterwards, he said, other than the last day, it kind of was, not the biggest celebration. It kind of went out with a little bit of a whimper other than that last day. But I just hate seeing racetracks close. I know I see a lot of people on the internet who say, we don't need so many tracks. We need to reduce and da-da-da-da-da. And maybe there's truth in that. But to me, what it does, it now means that an entire market of people, a million people in the Edmonton area, have nowhere to go to see live racing. And I don't think that real big fanship is cultivated online. I think it can be enhanced online. I think there are a lot of people who do find love in the sport by starting by playing online or by simulcast. But a lot of folks I know who are passionate about the sport, it's created from the live racing experience. And I just, I hate seeing tracks close. I hate seeing my friends knowing they're going to have to look for jobs sometime soon. So that's kind of a bummer. The other interesting story that came up this morning was in the Hollywood Reporter, of all places, not some place you see a lot about horse racing or gambling, but the big picture, the cover story for the Hollywood Reporter coming out is how the $100 million NYPD Blue creator gambled away his fortune. And it's about David Milch, who was one of the co-creators, if you remember, on HBO a couple years ago. There's that show Luck that centered around Santa Anita Racecourse with Dustin Hoffman. It ended up getting canceled because some horses got hurt during the filming of it. But essentially, the story talks about how this guy, kind of blew through his fortune by betting at the track. And it's a fascinating read, and it's something, I've mentioned my book on here, Southbound, and it's something I've written about gambling over your head. And, because you see a lot of folks in this sport who can't manage their gambling. And, I'm not speaking on behalf of Bet America. I'm speaking on behalf of Jason right now. But I don't think the sport wants to exist off people who have gambling problems. I think the sport wants to. I'm so not anti-gambling. I'm very pro-gambling. But I think that when it reaches a certain point, some people need help. And it sounds like this guy is one of them. I mean, losing, when they say he earned more than $100 million, that doesn't mean he blew through $100 million. I mean, that's just saying kind of what his total career earnings were. That's like when guys in the NBA, they're like, oh, he made, you know, $180 million, but he's broke. And it's like, you forget taxes, agents, everything else. You know, he probably made $70 million, which is, you know, still an obscene amount of money to blow through. But it's an interesting story. I mean, you know, the guy probably was betting just thousands and thousands of dollars on the races at Santa Anita, and you just have to be careful when you're, you know, one of the problems with people who have a lot of money sometimes and they gamble, you know, a little bit misbehavingly is that they, you know, it's a little harder for them to bottom out because they just keep having, you know, more and more dough to go back on. And so I'm real interested to see how this kind of plays out because it sounds like, you know, the article also goes on to talk about other folks in Hollywood who, you know, there's kind of the famed Hollywood poker games and stuff like that. And so it's a real interesting read. I think it's actually the cover story on the Hollywood Reporter this week. But yeah, David Milch, it was a fascinating read. And, you know, I'm the subject of problem gambling, I'm always interested in. You know, it's, I think it's a little bit of a line we have to walk in the horse racing business in terms of, you know, we want customers to gamble, we want people to bet, but we don't want, you know, people losing their livelihoods and then their whole existence. And again, I'm not speaking for Bet America on that. I'm speaking for myself on that. So anyway, so in maybe one of the world's worst transitions of all time, here's our bad beat of the week.
Come on, with it, three horse. Oh, man.
Bad beat of the week.
All right, so this week's bad beat of the week, we go back to actually this past Wednesday. Doug McPherson, who is the handicapper, he's a chart caller and I think part-time maybe an announcer at Ajax Downs in Canada. You can find him at LD McPherson, but Doug, very active on social media, loves to play, loves to talk about sports, loves to talk about bad pop music, but a really cool kid. One of my good friends, Carly Kaiser, says, she vouches for Doug. She says, Doug is good folks. So Doug is, you know, he's following the harness action and he sees there's a nice pick four carry over at Pompano. And he tweets out, you know, hey, if you're looking for something to do tonight, Wednesday night, quiet, how about this big pick four carryover at Pompano? So Doug plays a $176 ticket. Now, in Canada, you can't do 50 cents because they don't allow it for some weird reason. So he does a 60 cent. It's a 50 cent base wager. Doug makes a 60 cent play. So he goes pretty big in the first leg. He goes seven deep. And then he goes six deep in the next leg, single, and then seven deep in the final leg. So he's got a pretty good coverage on his ticket there. So first leg, it's a dead heat. You got a 3-1 and a 20-1. Now Doug's got both of them. So he's got two tickets. So he's got $1.20 worth of live tickets. So yeah, a dead heat between a, you know, 3-1 third choice and a 19-1 longest shot on the board. So a pretty good start. He's dealt his tickets, you know, two, and he's got one of them that's, you know, a real long one. So the next race, another one of Doug's spread races, he hits a 45-1 shot, wins it by two lengths going away. So now things are looking good, but he's got his single coming up. He's single to one of the favorites, 8-5 shot, Southwind Trini. Southwind Trini breaks fourth, makes big move at the half mile pole, takes command with a quarter left to go, wins with ease by 2 3/4 lengths. So now. Now Doug's looking real good. He's got the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 9 going into the final races. The only horses he doesn't have are the 7, who's 28-1, and the 8, who's 43-1. And so, so the race is going off, and the 3-horse breaks in the lead. He's a 5-1 shot, and he's in front pretty solidly. Now, at the first call, the 2 horses Doug doesn't have are 7th and 8th, and they're 9 lengths behind and 11 lengths behind. At the half-mile call, they're 7th and 8th, 7 and 8 lengths behind, respectively. So the 8-horse Gold Star Rockette, at 43-1, starts making a 3-wide move. Not just, not first over, you know, a 3-wide move. 6th in the stretch call, comes flying on the outside, and catches the shortest distance to one of Doug's horses in the final jumps to win. And Doug tweets out in all caps, "Why didn't I go all in the last leg? What is wrong with me?" So not only does he take a horrible beat because the horse had an impossible trip at 45-1 and wins, you know, Doug's thinking, I should have just put in the extra two horses. Doug would have won about $19,000. It paid $16,000 for a buck. He would have had it for 20 cents. Now, he would have had, you know, a winning combination, so it would have lowered the pay. But probably somewhere in the area of $15,000 to $18,000 bucks. So a brutal beat for my man Dougie Mac. He's real fun on Snapchat, apparently, so find him on Snapchat. But Doug, our sympathies are with you. You are our bad beat of the week. So very, very large condolences, my friend. And hopefully your picks do a little bit better. That's a pretty sick one. I watched the race, and then when I looked at the chart, I go, God, at first call, this guy's got to think, oh, I'm set. I got, you know, all I got to do is beat a couple of 30 and 50-1 shots, and they're last 12 lengths behind. I'm golden. Brutal, brutal, brutal beat. Well, we're going to head out to a short time out here on the Bet America Radio Network. And when we come back, we're going to be joined by Kevin Schnoor, who is a student in the racetrack industry program. I'm curious to know what exactly goes on down there, because there's so many folks in the industry who are RTIP graduates, and it's obviously done a great job of putting people into the industry. So I'm curious what it's like for a student in that program. So we're going to head out to a short timeout. Let's hear from our friend Kayla Straw.
Hello, this is Kayla Straw, and I'm here to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It is the fastest growing legal, safe, and secure website to place all your bets on horse racing. BetAmerica covers over 200 racetracks from North America, the UK, and my home country, Australia. New players to BetAmerica receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the BetAmerica way.
All right, welcome back to the Bet America Radio Network. You are in the barn, and joining us here in the barn is the track handicapper from Rialto Park. I've learned it's not Rialto, it's Rialto, down in Tucson, Arizona. He's a student at the Arizona Racetrack Industry Program, and I have tons of friends who went to the RTIP, but I thought it'd be fun to have somebody who's there right now in the trenches. So we're pleased to go down to beautiful Tucson, Arizona, and welcome in Kevin Schnoor. Kevin, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, Jason.
Yeah, it's good. It's good to have you on. So you guys just got started now at the Rialto Park meet, right?
Yeah, last weekend, the 13th and 14th was the opening weekend. We run through the 20th of March.
So it's like a 6-week meet.
Correct.
And now is the track down there, is it affiliated with the Racetrack Industry Program?
Not necessarily like officially, but. Mike Weiss, the general manager, and Doug Reed, the head of the racetrack industry program, they work together, you know, trying to find out, like, who in the racetrack industry program would be, you know, interested in working at Rialto. And, it's really just, like, a good way to, you know, I get some hands-on experience, and, you know, we're good employees, and they like us.
Oh, yeah, but it works out perfect. Plus, you're probably cheap labor.
Yeah, exactly. They're glorified interns.
Exactly. See, Mike Weiss knows what he's doing. Mike Weiss is, of course, famous for creating the Beulah twins.
Yeah, that's where he makes that well known. He's told me that like 5 times already. He forgets that he tells people that, and he tells them it again.
Well, you know, I mean, he's trying to remind you, like, hey, I launched the careers of some very important analysts in the history of horse racing.
Yeah, no, it was a good idea. I mean, you know, most. You can't hear most of the simulcast TVs, so you know maybe that'd be good for me this weekend when we try to get it on live air. Can't hear me. But,
so was this past weekend your first time like live on air as a track handicapper?
Yeah, no, we didn't. We didn't get it broadcasted out.
Oh, okay.
This past weekend, unfortunately, so it was just on track.
Okay.
But this upcoming weekend, we're pretty sure we're gonna be live.
Very cool. So how did you grow up in a racing family? Like what led you to the sport of horse racing?
You can blame my dad for that. My dad, he's owned racehorses ever since, you know, I was like 1 year old, and ever since they could carry me, he was bringing me to Monmouth Park. So I've been going to Monmouth ever since I was, you know, pretty young. So, and then I just started learning the game on my own. You know, the more time I went with my dad, you know, we started, you know, in the beginning, it was Saratoga, where me and my older brother, we would run around the backyard just looking for, like, bottle caps, just having fun, trying to get one of each beer. And and then, you know, learning to read the form, and, you know, it just really steamrolled from there.
And so when it came time to pick colleges, was that like your only goal was to go to the RTIP in Arizona, or did you have other places you were considering?
Well, I actually went to Maryland first. I graduated with my bachelor's at Maryland, and I'm a grad.
Oh, so you're in the grad program.
Correct. Okay. We just started that. They started that in 2006. Mm-hmm. It's a 2-year program, and it's good for, like, you know, second career students. There's a couple people that are you know, they're ex accountants, and they hated their job, so they wanted to get into something they like. So they wound up being in here, the horse racing industry.
Well, I know one guy who did almost that exact same thing is Eric Zimney, who's one of the head guys at Charlestown. He was an attorney, I believe, and then went to the graduate program there. Is the graduate program more focused on, like, front-side kind of stuff, or do they have, you know, animal science kind of stuff for the backstretch folks?
You're absolutely right, Jason. It's more on the business path. You can't – if you're a grad student, you have to be on the business path, so you're learning like managerial accounting and, you know, things like, you know, how to work in the racing office and, you know, just, yeah, like you said, all front side things. But if you're an undergrad, you have more options. You could be on the equine side or the business side.
You know, I worked in the racing office at River Downs, my first job. It was announcing there, but they also made me work in the race office. It was kind of a 2-part deal. And I'll never forget my first day. This guy calls and he goes, yeah, I want to put one in that first race. He goes, but are you going to take a short end of that? And I go, well, sir, it's at 5 furlongs. He goes, well, this mare can't go more than about 3.5. And I told the assistant secretary that, and he goes, just tell him no. Tell him it's a 5-furlong race.
Yeah, no favors around here.
I remember going home, and I was like, Mom, I have a college degree, and I'm answering questions like this.
Well, we got some stories of people doing the same thing. One of my friends is working as the helping the racing secretary here at Rito, and people are calling in trying to enter, you know, geldings and mare restricted races, and it's just, and they're like, oh, we always do this because they're trying to pull a fast one on the newbie, but he's not having it. He's just not having it.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's not rocket science to see a horse ineligible, but they will get by sometimes. But I mean, I think they, you know, I mean, you, because like the stewards and stuff are all state licensed people. It's not like you guys got, you know, people straight from the program doing that, right?
No, absolutely. The guys, the people with the, I mean, we all get overseen anyway. I mean, there's like, you know, state licensed stewards and, you know, general, all the management and everyone in the, you know, upper echelon of the track is, you know, I want to call us not real people, but they're like, you know, that's their real job. So they see, like, you know, they got checks and balances, and we just had to help out wherever we can, you know, and in between classes, and I'm over there, you know, a couple times a week and just doing whatever that they want me to do.
Now, you were telling me before we went on air, you just got done with class. What was the class that you were at again?
Oh, we were just at Advanced Racing Law.
Is that where you, like, learn how to not? What is Advanced Racing? I never think of laws in racing, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's just really to learn about all, like, the regulatory factors. And today specifically, we were talking about you know, watching out for race fixing. And, like, pool manipulation, because each pool is supposed to, like, the win odds and the place price of the second horse are supposed to correlate to, I mean, not, it's not exact all the time, but it's supposed to correlate to an exact payout is. So if they see, you know, irregularities in the wagering, they might look into it. And also, like, the stewards watch the races, and if, you know, they see a jockey, you know, not giving his best effort, you know, they talk to him and see why. And just like this past today, we had masochistic. We learned about. I had actually already known about that scenario, but there was a couple of people in my class who had it. And the first time out, the horse got a really bad, you know, just pretty much a really lazy ride. And then next time out, he aired at Churchill Downs on Kentucky Derby Day.
And then I think Sam Siegel bought him, right?
Yeah, I know. It's. Somebody in
Southern Cal, but he's gone on to, like, be a pretty darn good horse.
Yeah, no, he was in a couple stakes here at Santa Anita. I think he won one of them. He ran third in a different one. He's actually pretty good. It was just, I guess they were looking to try to make some money on Derby Day. I don't know.
Do you guys, like, do you talk about the pick six at Arlington back in the Breeders' Cup and stuff?
That was a legitimate bet that I placed, Jason.
Yeah.
We did talk about that last semester in the initial racing law class, and just how they changed the pick four pools to the tote systems. You know, two legs before. It was only two legs. It used to only be two legs before, where the tote system would tell the, would register that a pick six's tickets were alive. But now after every leg, how many live tickets goes down. So they would have noticed that the amount of live tickets went up in that instance. So they would have noticed that there was an irregularity.
So now you're in the grad school, but I'm assuming, you know, there's a lot of undergrad classes probably in the same building and stuff. Like, is the program, is it like separate total schools for like the front side kids and the back side kids? Or does everybody kind of go together?
In some instances, we are separate. But there's a lot of, you know, classes that overlap. Everyone has to take intro. We have intro to horse racing. Then you also got to take the intro racing law class. And there's an intro to, not intro, it's what's it called, the racing, the organizational structure. We also learn about how, like, the racing secretary works and, you know, who's the hierarchy and how that goes down. And then for the equine people have their own separate pass where they learn how to halter a horse, they prepare a weanling for a sale. It's pretty cool. I kind of wish I would, if I maybe have an elective next semester, I might head over to the farm and learn some of that, because I don't have too much horse experience, you know, hand on hand. But on the business path, there's a little bit separate. So to answer your question, the long answer to your question is it's a little separate, but it's also mixed at the same time.
Are there like cliques, like the business kids like pick on the backside kids?
No, it's actually the grad students that pick on the undergrads. We sit in the back of class. We think we're so tough, but we're really not.
That's fantastic. Like, I mean, it doesn't matter what school you go to or where you're at. Like, there's just totally going to always be clickiness like that.
Yeah. You can't sit with us. You know, like, we wore pink today. Come on, what are you doing?
Excuse me, Gallup person. Get out of here. I just like to. Now, do you guys just like watch the races? If they're like, hey, let's just take a day and watch the simulcast feeds or something?
Yeah, we actually, it's like clicky.
That's how I like to picture the program. Like, you show up and the
professor, like, we'll go, we hang out at the Greyhound track sometimes.
And, oh, yeah.
we're really the only population that's there.
Hey, I've called a race there, man. I've been there.
Yeah, we double the population when we walk in from 5 to 10.
When I went to Tucson Greyhound, I went there, it was like January 2nd of last year, and I walked in, and I think there were six people there, and one of them was the GM, and I was like talking to him, and I was like, yeah, I'm an announcer, I'm going over to Louisiana Downs. He's like, oh, you want a guest call or race? I'm like, hell yeah, I do. And so I like walk up these stairs, and like the announcer and the Equibase guys and the stewards are like all in like this one little tiny room, and I get up there, the lighting was not great, so you couldn't see anything. But like, you're probably the same way as I am. Like, you can still always have fun at a track, no matter how small or whatever it is.
Yeah, no, I actually kind of like going there. There's like dollar beers on Mondays, and it's, you know, we just hang out, you know, bet a couple dollars on some dogs, even though I kind of taught myself how to read the thing, and I don't really know. I just scream and hold my horse and make my dog win.
Now, I learned that with dogs, the first turn is everything. And so when you're watching replays, you really got to study how they do the first turn.
Yeah, I should probably actually watch replays if I'm going to bet dogs, but I just do it for fun occasionally. You know, $10 on a night, just having fun. But yeah, like you said, if you don't get right to the pretty much if you don't get to the front, you're not making up any serious ground.
Kevin Schnorr joining us. He's the racing analyst at Rialto Park and a graduate student at the racetrack industry program. Now, I know there's just a slew of graduates from the RTIP that are around the country. Do a lot of the graduates come back and kind of do guest lectures and stuff like that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's not all. It's funny that you say that, because yesterday Todd Fletcher stopped by and we were talking with him for like an hour, and he was talking about his son Peyton is looking at schools, and he was thinking of coming to coming out here to the racetrack energy program. He probably won't have too much trouble to get in. I don't think he's too worried about that. But no, it was cool that, you know, we to be able just to talk to him like a, you know, a casual person was awesome, because he puts on like some, like a big game face on when you're watching him TVG or, you know, any of the broadcasts.
It's called Todd
but,
face.
You know, just I should have showed him your
My question. Did you play him Pletcher Has the Highest Buyers, my hit song?
No, I really should have. I blew it, dude.
There's like 1,200 views on YouTube on that.
Yeah, 1,000 are me.
Yeah. Oh, I think he's gonna love it when he finally hears it. But does he?
He knows about the Twitter account.
Oh yeah, yeah. He's actually talked about that publicly. So like when Pletcher comes, does he just talk about his career? Does he talk about like maybe what you guys should expect going into the racing world? You know, what does he talk about?
He was talking about a little bit of everything. You know, we all talked about, you know, how he got started. We asked him questions. He was saying his dad was a trainer, and then his family wanted him to go to school, so he went here, and then, you know, he worked under Dwayne Lucas, and then eventually broke off. And, you know, he just kind of was talking about how, you know, especially in this industry, you got to take risks, because he was content to be under Dwayne Lucas because the stable was doing so well at that point, that time. But he also, you know, so we went from a big stable that was winning stakes races all the time to his own small stable where, you know, he wasn't, you know, always breaking through or that successful. But he just said that, you know, just take some risks, and especially in this industry, and it'll work out.
So, Kevin, what are your goals for the program? I mean, do you have an ideal career path you want to take, or you like? Because one of the things you try to do there is secure internships, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They help us. You know, we're a little bit of a disadvantage in the grad program. You only do have the one summer to get an internship, as opposed to if you're an undergrad, you have three.
Well, and that's kind of like every business school, right?
Yeah, exactly. But you got they actually help you find an internship. We fill out a sheet with our needs, with our, you know, our interests, and, you know, what part of the country our preferred where we would want to stay or whatever. Uh-huh. But so they help you find an internship, and I'm trying to, you know, either be I want to manage a racetrack, or I want to be in a racing secretary. I think that's pretty cool, the taking entries and making a condition book and things, because last semester we our big project in the racing office class was making a condition book, and I thought that was really awesome, and I learned a lot, and it's a lot harder than I thought it would be. You know, it was a fictional condition book, and I was up till 5 a.m, like pulling my hair out and saying, you know, how the hell am I going to fit this quarter horse race in? You know, I think it's fun, and I'm still figuring it out, you know, completely, but I think that's maybe where I'll end up.
Yeah, I think that's one of those interesting jobs where, I mean, a lot of it is, you know, doing the entries and the condition book and all stuff, but so much of it is kind of horseman management, because between them and the agents, I mean, they're, you know, our guy at Portland Meadows, who was there for years, Jerry Coles, I would sit with him, and every 2 minutes you get a horse, you know, an agent or a trainer coming in, hey, you know, I really would like to get a non-winners of three, you know, on the dirt at 5 furlong, you know, I mean, everybody wants a race. And so, but I mean, there's a lot going on there, but it's, you know, I mean, worst case, you're still, you know, you're working around the sport, and when it gets real busy in the afternoon and the race are going off, you're kicking back and, just reading over tomorrow's stuff.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's like you said, though, you're hitting it, that's pretty tough, because you gotta, you know, please the horsemen, please the track management. You also gotta please the betting public. It's actually a tough job to do.
Oh, for sure. So you mentioned you grew up at Monmouth Park. Now, Frank Miramonte stays at Santa Anita. Do you have a rooting interest of what announcer should be at Monmouth Park?
I actually don't. I don't even – I'll be honest with you. I don't even know who's, like, in the competition for it. We'll take Rona. If Rona doesn't win Santa Anita, we'll take him back. We'll take him back east.
But hey, that was your hint to say me, buddy.
Oh.
You
gave it up, man.
No. I could still announce, but you know, the nice thing about betamerica.com is I can work from anywhere doing the radio show. It's fantastic.
It's a real cool show. I like it. I tune in almost every time.
Well, I appreciate it. Well, Kevin, we wish you the best of luck, and now your website, betwithkevin.com, you have to get this going. It's I clicked on it from your Twitter, and it looks like you haven't really got it started yet.
Yeah, my friend, Josh from up north, hasn't done the graphics yet on it. He's probably gonna get fired pretty soon.
Yeah, I don't blame you. But okay, best of luck. Where can folks find you on Twitter if they want to follow? Because you're a fun Twitter guy. Like, you actually post stuff that, like, you have a sense of humor, which I appreciate.
Yeah, awesome. No, I try. I mean, some people, it's funny. Like, it's so obvious that I'm kidding, and I'll tweet, like, you know, some horse will win by 15, and I'll say this horse still sucks. And,
yeah.
You know, you'll have four or five comments like, "Are you kidding me?" You know, he won. I'm like, "Are you kidding?" Like, if you follow me at all, you know, I just say this to make people mad.
Yeah,
but my Twitter account is Down the Stretch 7.
Down the Stretch 7. Yeah, it never fails. I will almost always have, like, I just post a lot of stupid jokes on mine, and inevitably somebody will always either A, answer it, or B, you know, like, take some kind of little offense to it. And I was like, have I ever given you any indication that I'm giving you a real serious opinion about, you know, said subject matter? But, you know, it is what it is. So, well, Kevin, we appreciate your time, and I wish you the best of luck, and we'll be following you as you navigate your way through the sport of horse racing.
I appreciate that very much, Jason. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Kevin Schnoor joining us here on the Bet America Radio Network. We'll head out to a short timeout. We'll be right back after this word from your local sponsor.
Hey, I'm Chantel Sutherland Cruz, and want to tell you all about BetAmerica.com. It's the coolest place to bet on horse racing on over 200 racetracks from America and around the world. New players receive a 100% bonus on your first deposit, up to $300. That's the best sign-up bonus available today. It's time to play the Bet America way.
All right, so my thanks to Kevin Schnoor from the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. I know a ton of people that went to that program, and a lot of folks have a lot of really good things to say about it. I love that they have classes where they're learning about race fixing and stuff like that, because, horse players, we do not go for that crap. And so I want the people who are going to be in charge to know about it, know what to look for. And so it's pretty cool to hear that story. So my thanks to Kevin for joining us. Again, you can find him on Twitter at DownTheStretch7. He's a good follow on Twitter. I recommend it. And so big show coming up tomorrow for a Friday. We're going to be previewing the racing from Fairgrounds with Michael Baychok, a former NHC champion and a partner in the Tournament Edge website. And also, Drayden Van Dyke, one of the top Southern California riders, is going to join us. So, busy Friday show as we take you into the weekend. Don't forget, you can catch up with past episodes at betamerica.com. Also, be sure to check out some of the great promotions we have. Speaking of the Risen Star, our Kentucky Derby prep promotion, just go to betamerica.com/extra, click on the promotions calendar, and you can get information about it. Essentially, if you bet the winner of the Kentucky Derby prep, like this weekend, the Risen Star, if you bet the winner, you're going to get, and that horse wins and ends up in the Kentucky Derby, you're going to get a win ticket on that horse in the Kentucky Derby. So go to betamerica.com/extra, click on that promo calendar, and check out all the great stuff we got going on here at betamerica.com. So from all of us here at betamerica.com and the Bet America Radio Network, I'm Jason Bean, bidding you a very pleasant Thursday afternoon, morning, evening, whatever time you're listening. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.